This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, your community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
This is Jeremy Roberts on behalf of Hawke's Bay Poetry Live, a show broadcast on Wednesday afternoons at 3 p.m. You can listen on 104.7 FM or 1431 AM, or as a podcast on the Radio Hawke's Bay website. My guest today is Rebecca Burgess, who was on the show a few years back. Rebecca was born in England in 1981. A former journalist, she now works as a photographer and lives in Plymouth in a falling down old batch. She refuses to demolish and rebuild. Up to chat about that. She's a lover of the old school and is drawn to beauty in nature, fashion, design, and words. Along with frequenting open mic events in the Wellington region, Rebecca has performed at the East West Poetry Fest in Palmerston North, and she's also been a guest poet for Hawke's Bay Life Poets in Hastings. As connections to our region listeners, and prior to this month, I suppose, she's released two books of poetry, Chasing Rainbows and Advocating Madness, and has got a brand new book coming out soon. Oh, it's just about there, isn't it? But we're going to talk about that. But I thought, look, I'll just add to that. I was privileged to write the blurb for her new collection. And I made the statement, if you've ever seen Rebecca Burgess read her poetry to a live audience, you will know that she is the real deal, possessed by a genuine poetic spirit. So it's a real privilege to have you back, Rebecca. Welcome back to the show. It's been 6 years, actually, since we spoke. And I wanted to say congratulations on your new collection. I really loved it. I like the title, Hope Float, divided into three sections. The opposite of love is fear, peace, and motherhood. And cynical me, I couldn't help but think, hope also sinks at times. Sorry about that. Where did the title come from?
Hi, Jeremy. Yeah, thank you very much for having me back on the show. It's a real privilege to be part of it as well, so thank you.
Cool.
Well, originally the book was going to be called In Defense of Love, but I don't know, I changed it. I'm just going to shut this window.
Oh, yeah, sure. Cold draft, is it, coming through?
Oh, well, just in case there's some noise.
Oh, right.
There was some noise just then.
Okay.
Yeah, but then I sort of changed it, and I'm not sure, but Hope Floats was actually the title of a poem that I wrote in 2018, a little short one. So I guess in a way it's about the Karihana Bay coast where I live, and I've written down sea winds. It's quite cool. Yeah, so I'll just read that little poem. It's only very short.
Yeah.
Hope floats. Seagulls float on crystal air, biting and suspended on grace, connected a purity and offering a sign of hope.
Oh, well, that's a lovely introduction to your you and your collection. Yeah, and immediately there's a connection with nature that I think come up. Natural things in our discussion, isn't it? Look, I think it's a really powerful collection. Do you want to say it just right now? Is it printed yet, or is it about to be?
Yeah, it's printed. Well, I've got the print proof.
Ah.
So that's really cool to see it. And I'm really, really happy with it. It's come up so well. Yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, and congratulations.
Thank
The
you.
poem about your mother, which opens this collection, is it's a very startling poem, but I felt really gripped by it. So how close were you to your mum?
I was closer in the early days, but unfortunately, with her mental health struggles, she was in and out of hospital when I was, well, all throughout my life, really. And I found that really hard to deal with, and I guess hard to sort of connect with her. And unfortunately, when I was 16, she went back to the UK. And so there was a long time there where I wasn't in contact with her, and I couldn't see her because, the cost of travel and stuff to get to the UK. It was, I wanted to be close to her, and I guess at times I was, but then there were other times where she just wasn't able to be there for me. That poem took a long time to sort of come, I think. And then it sort of just came, but I guess like with anything that's quite traumatic, it can take a while to process it, I suppose.
Be
I definitely,
challenging.
yeah. And I feel very sad at all the time that we missed out on. And I guess other people who are very close to their mums and had them there, and they were able to be there and support them and stuff. I never really had that, so. Yeah, it was
Well,
difficult.
as I said, it's quite a, it's a very powerful poem, and the subject of motherhood certainly features very strongly in your writing. Okay, well, would you like to share a poem now from the collection?
Well, naturally, I thought I would share that one,
Okay.
actually. Reduced. Right of home, a childhood lost, a mother screaming for her own voice. Months of time that wasn't her own, fighting to be heard in a man's world. She raced cars, a champion before they fried her brain. She was never the same. Those memories scattered on the floor. The cleaner may have swept them up. She became nothing, a clown around town, reduced and reformatted. How a treatment could dissolve is beyond me.
So there's a lot of meaning, isn't there, behind a lot of those lines as well. And our readers will obviously make of it what they will, but I think that's a very powerful way to open your collection. So speaking of family, another character from the collection that's quite a presence is your grandfather, and it strikes me that you must miss him tremendously. And this in fact, this collection is dedicated to him, along with your daughter. What was he like, your grandfather? Man of the land, hey?
Yeah, he never lived in town. He always lived in the country. And I think he was always scared that he was going to end up in an old person's home. And I never thought that that kind of situation would have suited him at all. He always had space around him and farms and things. So, and in the end, he died at home, which I think he would have been quite pleased about. And he definitely didn't like getting old. He used to ring me often and he'd say, "Oh, I'm packing up, Beck," and I never really wanted to listen to that because, I just sort of thought that he would go on forever. He was a generous man, for me anyway. And he loved his grandkids. He was a big joker. He always had a peppermint for us in the pantry. We used to call him Peppy Poppy. And he loved to crack at the government. He used to have an answering machine message on his phone that said he's out working for the Inland Revenue. So he had a big sense of humour, that's for sure. Yeah. I miss him a lot. Yeah. It's just, I guess, just having him there. He just, as I say, he used to ring regularly, and he'd never miss a birthday. And it was my birthday recently, and he used to always ring me up on my birthday, and I just miss those little things like that. Particularly as he got older, like that's where it kind of was at. When they're younger, you go and do things with them, but then they slow down when they get older, and it's a bit more on those sorts of things. Yeah, but he was an adventurer. He used to drive around the country in a little van that he'd converted with a bed in it and things, and go and sleep around the place. So I guess he was a bit of a wanderer too, in a way. Yeah.
No, he sounds like a genuine Kiwi character. I love that little touch of the peppermint, just that simple little thing, you know. I think these days, I think, gosh, would the average kid be that thrilled with a single peppermint? Would they expect more or demand more? And you bring up an interesting thing about the country life that we'll probably talk about growing up and the expectations and pressures that are there these days for kids. Would you like to read another poem? Now, Rebecca.
Yeah, and naturally, I thought that I would read the one about my granddad.
Oh, thank you.
And everyone knew him as Don, but his name was actually Donald, but not with a D on the end. Yeah. The intoxication of a country life, moleskins in rain, horses slick and slippery reins. A dampened gully, curled fern fronds, dark dew twinkles with glowworms. You, my dear granddad, gave me a life untouched. Collecting mushrooms in long rained-on grass, your big cracked hand in mine. I was a mere girl, a slight little tomboy. Hours stopped in the Makrakapa hut you made for my dad when he was a boy. Time stopped in the rusted shells of cars and dusted machinery, lying amongst the plum trees and cloistered endless summers on my first pony, Ben. Mothering orphaned lambs, feeding puppies' kidneys on newspapers. For others, Pop, you were a different man, a worker, a farmer, a father, a fireman. But to me, you were my lifelong teacher. You taught me freedom and growing my dreams. There's a countryside in your memory, a country calendar kaleidoscape, warm eggs under clucky chooks, ruddy sunburnt faces. You lived on the land, died your heart still farming, because you never should have sold it, you said. I love you. You learnt what love is in the end. I mourn and delight in equal measure at the memories. Yours, a life well lived. Love, Beck.
Wow. A lot of highlights in that poem. I mean, for me, imagery and speaking of him in the way that you do. For somebody like myself who's apart from a stint on an oyster farm many years ago, I've had pretty much an urban existence, and I find a poem like that just draws me straight in, because I suppose not probably a few times I've wondered what that rural life would have been like, and the peacefulness of it appeals to me, but I know it's also bloody hard work. It's He must have been a hard worker. And what was his primary farming? It was he had sheep.
But in the early days, he was a dairy farmer, and
Oh,
they
okay.
started out with a farm. That was his parents' farm in Helpham, and that was a dairy farm.
Okay.
And he had some pigs as well, although I actually think that was my dad's little business idea, the pigs.
Ah.
And then they bought the farm in Huntervale, out the back of Huntervale, and that was sheep and beef, and it was very remote and it was very steep and definitely in the middle of nowhere. It was amazing.
Yeah, high country farm, as you say. And then that farm, it was sold. And do you know, is it still being worked as a farm, that land today?
No, that was he actually sold it into forestry, which I think he regretted in the end. But I don't know. I'm not sure why he did that, but so I think the trees are get nearly up for harvest.
Okay.
So it would be a very different place now.
Yeah. You haven't been back for many years, or?
No, I haven't been back at all. Although I did a little bit of research for this book and got in touch with, well, someone got in touch with me who actually works on the farm. I don't know whether he does the harvesting or what, but he had the old sign from the farm and he posted it to me. He had it on the top of his shed for 30 years.
Oh.
So that's really cool. And I took it outside and took a photo of it and put it in the book. I think that was a really cool little touch.
Yeah, your photography's I think really great, and this collection has a number of photos throughout, doesn't it? Which the average poetry book doesn't have. I think it brings a really very enjoyable component to the production. So, and mostly taken by yourself, aren't they? Apart from the historic ones, I guess, of your grandfather. One of them in there, isn't there?
No, there isn't. There's one of
No,
me,
it's one of.
that my dad took,
Oh.
when I was little. A couple more of me, but other than that, they're all mine.
Okay. Oh, good. So this whole thing about the high country farm, it had such a huge impact on you. And there's a line in your in a poem that talks about the intoxication of country life. And you also say that you'd go back there in a heartbeat. I suppose you've talked a bit about this already, but why? What's the why would you do that? I know it's one of those things where you think, oh, of course I'd love to go back in time or change my life back to how it was, but what are the aspects of farming or country life that are so powerful and appealing to you?
So that piece that I wrote, the little essay, I started writing that in my early 20s and I'm 44 now. And I just moved to Wellington after dairy farming myself and previously working with racehorses, which I did a lot when I was younger. So the difference was pretty stark, to be honest. I mean, to go from paddocks and not a lot of people to high-rise buildings and lots of traffic and buses and those sorts of things. Like, it was just, and I guess, the smell of the city is different too. I really missed it. I mean, there was an essence of the city that I liked as well, but I don't know. Things are just simpler in the country, I guess. It just seems like life is more real, I suppose. Yeah,
Sure. Yeah,
because
I get that.
you're, your existence is about sort of doing things for yourself, and I guess running a business as well if you're an adult. And I don't know. I guess things just seem a little bit fake in the cities sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, peer pressure and social media is rampant in the city, isn't it? I still hang on to my memories on that oyster farm, which was up in Russell in the Bay of Islands. I lived in a little caravan on a what was the remnants of an old farm, I think. But yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it's being woken up in the middle of the night. There's a sheep rubbing itself against the corner of the caravan, and the whole caravan's rocking. Little things like that you don't, definitely don't have in a high rise, do you? Oh, good. Look, well, how about a poem? Let's have another one.
Yeah, sure. So I thought I would read one about the country. It's called Frozen Time. I wrote this one a while ago as well. The dawn is always coldest just before the gold rays of palpable new day. Birds frozen in hesitant lull. Rooster in the distance. Cars never waking to the smoky commute. I dream a life of country, people softly rouse.
Yeah, I dream of a country. So, yeah, waking up and maybe after a good night's sleep, feeling that rest, and then suddenly the city and urbanization comes sort of crushing in. yeah, no, that's lovely. I really enjoy the way you simply capture, you transport the reader, with sort of crisp, clear imagery and the way your poems move. I think it's really very well done. Yeah, the essay, I was going to mention that essay because I was curious about that. It's a really interesting essay to read, and it does actually probably answer some of the very things I've been driving at. So what, a couple of pages or something, isn't it? The essay, I haven't got it open in front of me at the moment, but I don't know how many words it is, but I was curious as to your motivation for including that essay. It was it you didn't want to write, you could have written, maybe pulled some poems out of that, but you wanted to just make your statement. Is it a kind of a statement, and using prose and really crystallizing? Tell me why that's in there.
Well, I thought it worked quite well, actually.
Yep.
Originally, I was gonna include a number of them, but then it just sort of all went into one, I guess. Yeah, and as I said, I wrote that in my early 20s, and I just moved to Wellington, and I had always wanted to do something with that piece. And my late grandfather really loved it.
Oh,
He
good.
used to,
Yeah.
yeah, he
Yeah.
used to show everyone. Well, the original
Ah.
anyway,
Ah, well.
because I actually added to it for this book,
Yeah.
fleshed out a bit. And yeah, I don't know, it just sort of seemed to work.
Yeah.
I read it to my nana, who's still with us as well recently, and she said, "Oh, yeah, you really need to do something with that. Don't just put it away and forget about it." And she was obviously very touched about it, because she features in it as well and stuff. I just thought it was a really important thing to sort of capture and remind people of, I don't know, how life could be a little bit better, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, good. No, it's a great inclusion in the book, and the poems play against that, I suppose, or with it. Yeah, I mean, essays are far more, I don't know, accepted for their poetic virtues, I suppose, than they once were, if I may say that. Yeah. Hey, I really enjoyed reading your poem about the, must have been terrible, the devastating flood of 2020, and how that changed your relationship with strawberries forever. And the readers might, the listeners and the readers, were curious about that. My mum was flooded out of her home during that time, and she was never the same again. There was only a few months after she got back into her home, when it had been renovated, refurbished, that she was gone. It really, really affected her deeply. I wondered if you can take us back to that time. So, listeners, you may remember in November 2020, before Cyclone Gabrielle, there was a massive downpour of rain in the Lower North Island, and Napier got bombed. And I don't know if it was exactly the same day. I can't remember how that weather pattern was moving. But you were obviously flooded out of your home about that, and then maybe you couldn't end up with the strawberry thing.
So my daughter was 8 months old, and it was a Sunday morning, and my husband was on call for work, and he had luckily just literally got back about half an hour earlier, and it had been raining for a few days, but we didn't really think anything of it, and there was a little bit of water in the yard, but that was pretty common around here, and we didn't really think anything of that either. And then he said, "Oh, yeah, the water's going to come into the house in a minute." And I was like, "What? I don't know. I don't think I believed him." And then I sort of looked outside, and we've got this shed out in the garden, and the water was coming up so fast it was like a white water coming around the shed. It was rising so fast, I just couldn't believe how fast it was rising. And so I rang 111 because I guess that's what you think you should do. And they said, "Well, there's 20 people or so ahead of you. There's nothing we can do." And I was like, "Well, I've got a baby here. Like, what? Are we on our own?" They didn't like me very much, I don't think. I was freaking out, I guess. But in the end, we just started rushing around the house and put our daughter on the chair, and she just sort of sat there looking around her like she'd seen it all before.
Oh.
I wasn't really thinking straight at the time, I guess, because being 8 months old, she could have fallen off the chair and gone into the water. But I don't know, I guess we just needed to start lifting stuff up. So we saved quite a lot, really. Luckily, my writing as well. I didn't lose any writing, actually.
Oh, thank
So
goodness.
yeah, that would be devastating. And it was very traumatic, but I think at the time it sort of seemed to happen in slow motion in a way. And then someone down at the, because something had blocked up down at the beach, I think, and then they'd freed the water down at the beach, and then the water level just rushed out. Like, it was just incredible. As quickly as it came, it was gone. But at the height of it, like, there were plants floating around outside, and yeah, it was just the photos are just absolutely incredible, really, because we're in a bit of a bowl here. Yeah, so there wasn't really anywhere to go, really. And then we sort of just like walked around and went, "Oh, okay." And I guess I didn't really think that we were going to be out of the house at all. I thought, "Well, that's all right, we'll just clean it up and sleep here tonight. Like, what's the problem?"
Yeah.
And then next minute we're out of the house, and we moved 15 times in that year with our baby.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a big year, that's for sure. Yep.
Is the
Yeah.
house you're in now, that's the same house, is it?
Yes, it
Yes,
is.
yes.
Yep. And we do worry about it happening again. At least I do. I look at the weather and watch the forecast, which is something that I never used to do. And try not to look at the climate change news.
Yep.
I mean, will it happen again? I hope it really doesn't. We put some drainage in and stuff, so the water in the yard doesn't happen as much as it did, and they've got a pump down the road, which seems to sort of help things, but it's definitely a worry. And we're on piles here, so you know that I know other people who are on like concrete pads and things, and they were worse.
We were close. It came up to like the third step, but my mum was only, half a kilometre away, probably less than that. And her place was ground level. So that was it. Anyone on that street. Yeah, there were a lot of people. The next few days, all you saw on the street was mattresses and, everything ruined.
It was the weirdest thing after the flood. Trucks of just everyone's stuff being taken to the dump, and it was the weirdest thing, like massive big trucks, and it's like something I would have actually imagined in a war zone. Like this was something that you wouldn't expect to see.
So I made a bit of a thing about the strawberries. So do you want to either tell us or maybe read that poem?
Yeah, I can read that one, no worries.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing. Strawberries should be a celebration. Everybody bought strawberries after the flood. Strange choice, it's hardly a celebration. They moulded and sweated in the plastic containers in the sticky heat as my house sweated after the water tore through in the race to save memories before the mould set in. Now, whenever I see strawberries, I remember them sweating and moulding in the sun, my crying windows, drying fans, the silt and walls cut open, a haunted shell, trucks piled high with couches and whiteware, like something off the news in a war zone. A no man's wasteland, dreamscape, dark quicksand, head spinner cost, those sweating strawberries, a Christmas lost.
Rebecca, country school days feature in this collection, and you strongly believe that when it comes to raising children, country life wins over urban. How would you sum up that philosophy or comment on that, further on that?
Well, before I lived out the back of Hunterville, I went to a intermediate in Palmerston North, and I was bullied quite a lot. I didn't have very good eyes, and they used to call me Bung Eye. It was awful. And when I moved to the country and went to this little country school, which has since closed down, sadly, but yeah, there was none of that. Everyone was just sort of the same, you know, you were just equals, and the kids just seemed to be more open-minded. And we did cool stuff like lamb and calf days and those sorts of things, and cross country we used to run around someone's farm, not around the roads. And yeah, it's just seemed a lot more real. I really liked that school. Yeah, I guess the difference is that you know, you had all kids in two classrooms, and they were all different ages, so maybe you didn't get extended as much as what you could have at a bigger school. But yeah, I really liked it. I liked how you could just go to school in gumboots and it didn't matter, and people just sort of, the kids just, yeah, everyone just got along mostly, yeah.
I think kids would really enjoy that, given the chance. Just to not be quite so, maybe quite so regimented. And gosh, aren't kids mean sometimes with things they say? It's just a bit of a ritual of life, unfortunately. Especially seems once you get to sort of intermediate age. That's when peer pressure and bullying can kick in. Just a more natural environment and Yeah, no, understood. Would you like to share a poem?
I mean, maybe I can read a little excerpt from that essay.
Yes, do, yes, absolutely.
I won't read all of it because it's a bit long, but I'll just read a couple of little bits.
Okay.
At age 11, I lived near Hunterwell on a North Island high country sheep and beef station called Whararoa, where the only access was half an hour drive down a narrow, windy gravel road. Trips to town were few. Our time was filled with farm duties, going out on the farm on the bikes or the horses, or helping out with mustering for docking and shearing. I remember docking next to the frogs in the pond up the back, the smell of burning tails in my nose, and the endless summers of sweltering heat. I remember the lambs crying for their mothers. My experience of rural school life was favourable. Compared with the cruelty and torments of urban schools, I found my rural classmates much more forgiving and down to earth. It didn't matter if your hair wasn't perfect or your clothes weren't the right brand, and I often wore gumboots to school. Cross country wasn't a trek around roads, it was running around someone's farm on farm tracks. Children were trusted a lot more out there. By August, lambs would be running around everywhere. Orphans required a lot of work and sometimes died within a day. But to me, it was pure joy feeding my lamb, watching its tail move like a corkscrew. Before long, Floppy was quite content to follow me around, and sometimes we'd sleep together in the orchard, my head on his woolly belly. I had a pet chicken and I'd spend hours with her, and I loved it when she got plucky and my granddad would put eggs under her with his big cracked hands. Collecting the eggs was another treat. Sometimes they were still warm. We trained them to do a show that we all made all the adults watch. Chickens are wonderful animals. We had a white pig bucket stained with the residue of food scraps that stood outside the door. Then there was the milk bucket that was scrubbed fastidiously with hot water every morning. Full milk from a cow was even better when you scooped the thick layer of cream off the top and had it on cereal, usually rice bubbles. Trips to town were few, and it was a life of make do. Frozen and chilled foods were always wrapped in newspaper. Old habits die hard, and I'll sometimes ask our local supermarket tellers to wrap the newspaper, but it's not really a thing around here, and they're usually a bit flustered when I ask.
Oh, that's a lovely excerpt. Yeah, it's terrific, isn't it? It's a way into your collection as well. I don't know, some readers might read the essay first and then, find out more about you. That amazing upbringing and that you had. So listeners, we're talking to Rebecca Burgess, Plimerton poet, North Island poet, New Zealand poet, and she has a new collection, Hope Floats. I thought the poem about childbirth, changing the subject, was so brutally honest and moving, and I really loved the line, "My screams come from the other side of the room." And you also cover breastfeeding and the relationship between a mother and a baby. I just thought that was such powerful writing. It seems you were never not going to write about these things, right? It's just so much a part of who you are, and you're such an honest, open writer about your life. So, yeah, what do how do you feel about those poems that you created? They have a brutal honesty and power.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with that one, to be honest. I wrote it as part of the Iowa poetry workshop at Victoria University. And I remember the tutor saying that she was glad that it wasn't a romanticised view of birth. And I think that was the way that I wanted to go into it, like with this whole Zen feeling and it was going to be all right and, we were taught to do this and all that sort of thing. But it was sort of worse than I could. Yeah, it was horrible. It was an awful. Yeah, it was just awful.
Men don't get it, do they?
And it was in lockdown as well, which didn't really help with any of that. And sort of after Trinity was born, my husband sort of could stay for 3 hours, and then he was sort of made to leave, and we're in hospital by ourselves for 2 days. And yeah, that was just awful because, first baby and all that, you'd think that support would be paramount. So,
It does seem kind of bizarre now, doesn't it? Wow. Well, readers, I can only suggest that you get the collection and dive into all these poems, and Rebecca's honesty will really win you over, I think. We've got, I guess, about 10 minutes more, Rebecca. Do you want to read another poem at this point, or I can, I've got a couple more things I can run past you if you like, but I think maybe the listeners would just love to hear you read some of your work.
I can read that poem.
Okay.
They said birth was beautiful. Out of body, your body comes out of my body. My screams come from the other side of the room. The walls crawl. I can imagine how women die through this. My mind was in the walls. My mind was everywhere. My body was a brutal slab. In this dissection, I wanted oblivion, but beyond return. I nearly scratched out your father's eyes. You were bloody. Then there was nothing, just you.
I mean, to me, it's got the power of Sylvia Plath, but it's just so wow. Okay. Yeah, as you say, non romanticizing, and why should it be romanticized, I suppose, if you're a writer, gosh. Yeah, no, good on you for doing that. So, let's just talk about this collection getting out there. Is it, have you, how's the marketing side going? Can listeners expect to find it online or in bookshops? What's the likely, are you going to be, you're a live performer. Do you have any openings or readings coming up about the book people could maybe go to?
We've got 2 dates of Winterlude coming up after the book's launched, and that's going to be in Matariki weekend at Mana Little Theatre. And previously we only had one night, and now we've got two because people are asking for two, and that's really cool. So that's going to be it. We haven't started advertising that yet, but it will be Matariki weekend, the Friday and the Saturday night at Mana Little Theatre in Plymouth. And
Okay.
then on June the 6th is my book launch, and that will be in Wellington at the Undercurrent on at 6:30. And then hopefully we'll have some more performances as well, but still waiting to hear on that.
Okay. So
And if there,
listeners, sorry, Rebecca is
if
on Instagram. Do you want to give them any contacts for you?
yeah,
Or what's the
so
best way to get in touch?
my Instagram handle, you call it, isn't it?
Yeah.
is
Okay.
Rebecca Burgess Poetry. And then I also have a photography website. So all of my books will be available through there as well. And it might be easier if I give you that after the show, yeah? It's a little bit long and I can't really remember it.
Okay, well, I can when I make a post about this interview, I can add some material in, some links or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
No, look, good, all the best, and good luck for the launch of this book. Look, it's been really great catching up with you. Thanks for coming on the show and sharing your work. Do you want to finish the show on with a poem? You want to go out with a poem or say whatever you would like to the listeners?
I'd love to. So one of the things that I've been doing this year with the Winterlude series, one of the guys from there, Alan Galloway, is doing some poetry music, and that's something I'd like to carry on doing a bit more of, because it just works really well. I love doing poetry with music. It adds another element to it. And we'll be definitely doing some of that at the Winterlude series. And I haven't got Alan with me here at the moment, but I thought I might read one of the poems that I did do to music at another performance we did in February, because I don't know, I just really like it. Mirrors. We're mirrors, pieces of them, jagged and rough, each piece cut by a thousand memories, significant memories, memories of a person that no longer seems to be me. Today, unsettled, I feel an imposter in it all, a visitor resting before journeying on, a temporary body, an aching soul. How did we get here? An empty place from the binds of warmth and love? And how is it possible to keep an arid wind from eroding the moments so that nothing is left of substance? Just a whisper here and there, a photograph, an echo, a plea for time to reinstate all that was. Where did it go? Will it return, all awash with gold, or will it retreat even further so not even whispers remain?
Oh, that's that's a really intriguing poem, and the immediate thought is what's the music that's accompanying that. That would be lovely to see you read that. And would you be stretching out the words like the with pauses between stanzas or lines when there's music, or do you tend to read it straight through?
Yeah, I think it gets stretched out a bit. Yeah. And it was so interesting because I just sort of read it, and then Alan sort of thought of something and then just started playing it. So
Oh,
it's
great.
really so, and it fits so well. It's got sort of like a dreamy sort of remembering guitar chords, I guess. Yeah. It works really well. I'm so impressed with how well it's working.
Oh, that's good. I, as you
Yeah.
know, I put poems with music, and one day have a a show where it's all about music and poetry. Yeah, it'd be great. Hey, Rebecca, thank you so much again for coming. So listeners, watch out for her new book, Hope Floats, and hopefully we'll see you one day in Hawke's Bay. That'll be so cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Okay.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, your community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.